Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Atfance Intellect. Now, I'm joined on a video call with Brendan Ambrose, the company's GM for data privacy. Brendan, it's good to see you. Welcome.
Hi, Duncan. Good to see you as well. I'm very excited to be on your podcast. I'm an avid listener, cool to actually be on this podcast. It's a bit surreal, I'll be honest.
good to hear. Well, welcome, Brendan. It's we've known each other for a very long time, so it's good to see you. Now, tell me a bit about Atfance Intellect. I know you have offices in South Africa, the Netherlands, and the UK. What does the company do exactly?
So we've got three facets to Atfance Intellect. We've got data analytics, cybersecurity, and now data privacy. Data analytics, I mean, as I mentioned to you before, if one day when I'm smart enough to explain exactly what they do, I'll be very proud of myself, but today's not really that day. But what they essentially do is they take the data that you have in your organization and they give you the most value that you can out of that data. So they can track everything from weather patterns influencing customer count in your stores through to oddities within your data framework, you know. So it's from highly technical through to very practical. Mm-hmm. And with that, they try and get the most business value that they can out of that. And they use a system called Splunk, which is an unstructured data system. And I think we are the leaders, or if not the leaders, one of the leaders in South Africa in terms of Splunk implementation, and certainly within the EU and the UK as well. Then there's cybersecurity, which is what it sounds like. So cybersecurity focuses on securing down your network, your devices, and the data within your company and what you have and what you need to protect.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I know.
And then there's my division.
Yeah.
Sorry. You said you know Splunk.
I was just going to say I know Splunk. They're based out of Silicon Valley, aren't they?
They are, and I'm learning a lot about them. They apparently have a mule called Buttercup, or a pony called Buttercup, which they have in all of their offices. And that's so far the coolest thing I've learned about Splunk, is that they have an actual pony called Buttercup, and then they have like this model of apparently. I don't know. This could all be like a Silicon Valley old wives' tale, but this is what I've heard. But in each office, they've got a model of this of Buttercup, and it's become quite like to me, it sounds like a golden calf situation. But you know, maybe let's not go there. it seems like an amazing platform, and the guys who use it are like religious about Splunk, and they rave about it. Like I've never seen techies rave, and I've seen the techies rave about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It does just seem like a very, very robust platform that allows you to pull proper useful stuff out of your data, as opposed to just, you know, leaning on buzzwords and whatnot.
Yeah. Right. You were about to tell us about your division, which when I interrupted you. Please carry on.
No problem. So my division is data privacy. And I mean, we're now going to market with this concept of the power of three. We were saying, you know, not only can we have a look at your data and pull the most value out of it, so you're not just incurring hosting fees, but you're actually getting real value out of that data. Not only can we create the systems, put in the software, and put in the processes to protect that data, we can also create the legal frameworks, the compliance frameworks, and the structures within your business in order to comply with all the data privacy and data protection legislation that's around the world now. And that's becoming far more and more prevalent globally, and is very prevalent now in the EU, and going to be very prevalent in South Africa, well, as of next year, July.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about it. I think it's very cool. I don't know of any other firm offering that trifecta, mm-hmm. where you're not just getting the value out of data analytics, but you're saying, well, actually, you might need some framework in here in order to comply and avoid penalties, or comply and avoid sanctions from any of the regulators. Or in fact, actually, maybe this piece of legislation doesn't apply to you, and you should be focusing on these other pieces of legislation. Mm-hmm. So it's that synergy between our departments that I'm very, very excited about, and that I think brings value to clients in a way that no one else does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, really cool. I was the data protection officer of one of the big four consulting firms in Africa. And I found often that you had to speak so many languages. You had to speak the language of information security. You had to speak the language of IT. You had to speak the language of legal, and you had to speak the language of compliance. And you know, to balance all of that, yeah. is is tough. And I mean, I think right now in South Africa, the information officer role is a vastly underestimated job. And people getting put into those positions are very quickly realizing, if they didn't know before, how much effort it is and how administratively intense that role is.
Yeah.
And from my side, I look at trying to take away some of that administrative burden to see where we can automate some of it, if we can, if it's necessary, if it's cost effective, or how we can manage that or put in place the right processes and procedures so that you're not a DPO or an information officer who's just like totally bogged down on day-to-day admin.
Right. So just so I fully understand, Advanced Intellect then is would you describe it primarily as an advisory firm, or do you also get involved in rolling up your sleeves and doing project implementations as well?
So we do project development, development as well. It's, I mean, advisory, I think, is a very broad term. So that's primarily what my role is there, is to act in an advisory capacity to create those frameworks, but then also to ensure that they're properly implemented. And same thing with analytics, and same thing with cybersecurity. We're not a handoff and go, you know, go forth and good luck.
Yes.
That being said, and I often make this joke, is that I'm trying to work myself out of a job with most of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is not to have this key man risk of Advanced Intellect. The goal is to make our clients as self-sufficient as they possibly can be, and for us to be the prime or the preferred resource when clients have questions around data privacy. Mm-hmm. Because data privacy is one of those things that I find you need to know enough to manage most of it yourself. And where it comes down to deeply technical issues and how they affect your business, like what constitutes the personal information of a juristic person, which is a really in vogue question at the moment in South Africa, that's where we can get involved and we can help you with that. But ideally, the setup for me is to allow clients to be as self-sufficient as they possibly can be. And I mean, I noticed that when I was in-house, there was a massive drive to doing everything that you can internally and only using external advisors when necessary. And I agree with that approach. I think that's the right approach, because no one understands your business as well as you. And your legal team or your compliance team understand your business better than any external advisor can.
Yes.
But they are a limited team, and they can't know everything.
Yep.
So the assistance is where we're coming in, and where we want to empower the teams to do what they can do. And if it's in terms of technology, that's where we bring in the other two divisions to have those discussions around that empowerment.
All right. So we're going to focus in our discussion this afternoon, Brendan, largely on data privacy and the laws and the regulations around that. I think everyone by now has heard of the POPI Act and Europe's GDPR or General Data Protection Regulation. But I think a recap is always a good idea. Maybe just take us through those two pieces of legislation and what they mean for companies here in South Africa.
Sure. So let's start off with the GDPR, because that's currently in effect, and it affects all European companies processing personal information. So maybe let's have a quick definition on what personal information is, right? So in Europe, in terms of the GDPR, it's any personally identifiable information of an individual, right? And we can go, there's special personal information, and we can drill that down a bit further, but just keep that one in mind.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of POPIA, that definition is extended to juristic persons as well. So just also park that, put a pin in that, just keep that in mind.
A juristic person being
a company or a trust, a close corporation. So anything that has that is a legal person, mm-hmm. so to speak, now is covered in terms of the POPIA.
Okay.
While in terms of the GDPR, it isn't. It's only individuals. Natural persons.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing that POPIA focuses on both?
It's an interesting thing. I mean, I'm not such a fan of it. I think it's very difficult to enforce, because when you look at the definition and you start trying to narrow down what actually is the personal information of a juristic person, it gets very confusing very quickly. So I'm not sure how the regulator is going to enforce that and how that's going to be managed. So it's landed up. Companies have taken two approaches that I've seen with my clients. They've taken a very conservative approach to say, well, look, then any information pertaining to the business, whether it be financial records or the phone number of the business, yeah. would constitute personal information of a juristic person. But that's tough, right? Because now you have all these other concerns and considerations you have to take into place with all this information that you have on another company. So it's I've not seen that work in any other jurisdiction. I know some other jurisdictions have that, and I know some jurisdictions had that inclusion of juristic persons and then removed it, purely because it's a difficult concept to enforce. It's a difficult concept to actually practically manage. And for me, at least, it doesn't stick to what the purpose of data protection is. That is something which needs to be managed in terms of confidentiality agreements, or the structure in which you do business with other companies. It's confusing, and it takes a lot of resources and a lot of time to try and figure that out and how that affects your business.
So GDPR, why should we here in South Africa care about a piece of European legislation?
So you may care about it or you may not, but it depends very much on whether or not whether you fall within its extraterritorial provisions, right? So the GDPR is quite specific as to when you need to comply with it if you're not a company based in the EU, right? And that's if you're monitoring the activities of EU citizens or you're selling or marketing to EU citizens as well. There's some nuances to that, and I mean we can get into that later if you'd like, but those are the two major points I like to keep in mind when addressing that. And then whether you're or not you're processing the personal information of European citizens when they're or persons based in the EU, right? I like to look at it broadly as European citizens. But it's if you fulfill those criteria, then you probably are subject to the GDPR, right? And then you're subject to all its penalties and all its fines and all the regulations that come into place with it. But if you're not doing those things, then it's not something that you need to be too concerned about. It's something to keep in the back of your mind because it is the primary piece of data protection legislation around the world. But on the same token, you don't want to start bogging your company down with things that don't directly apply to you. And I mean, one of the things I do is I do a GDPR compliance assessment to determine whether or not you do fall within Article 3 of the GDPR, which sets out the extraterritorial terms.
So even Brendan, if your company is not registered in any EU country, you just have to market, for example, to an EU citizen or someone living in the EU, and the GDPR will affect you. But do they have, I mean, do those regulations have reach here? Can Europe enforce the GDPR on you as a South African registered and owned company?
Yeah, so it's tough that, right? And that's a very good question because there's what the GDPR does and makes provisions for a representative. So if you are doing those sorts of things, you should have a GDPR representative within the EU. And I mean, that's something I've set up before. And it's really if you're substantially processing substantial information around EU citizens, you should have a representative there. And it's that representative which takes the flak, right? So they've tried to structure the GDPR in such a way that the extraterritorial provisions can be enforced. But if you're never setting foot in the EU, it's going to be very difficult for a regulator to actually directly enforce those with you as a company. It's untested properly in the EU, and it's I find really interesting. And I mean, personally, that's why I find data protection law so fascinating, because it grows with you, right? As in terms of, well, in my career at least, it's changed and grown and developed as I've progressed through my career, as opposed to being the sort of very fixed and set body of law at the moment. And case law and common law.
Understood. So does it apply to both GDPR and POPIA apply to only a certain size of company, or if you're a one-man shop, are you also affected by these rules?
So the GDPR and POPIA apply to all sizes of companies, and it's whether or not the GDPR applies to you as a South African company that you need to consider. POPIA will apply to you as a South African company, whether or not you're a one-man band or 28,000 strong institution. You need to be aware that POPIA does have an effect in your business and will be you will be judged accordingly in terms of the act by the regulator. That being said, it is a risk-based approach, or broadly a risk-based approach, right? So to put in place a privacy program for an organization with 5,000 staff is a very different job to putting in a privacy program for an organization with 40 staff. And I mean, I always try to take the view that you're complying with this to try and get benefit for your organization. You're not trying to comply with the POPIA to make sure that you don't receive a regulatory fine. That comes in almost secondary. You want to avoid that. You obviously don't want any of these fines. You need to put that in place. But the prime thing you're trying to do is to manage and understand the data within your organization, and you need to do that according to a legal framework, right? And I help in developing those legal frameworks, but we always take into account the size of the organization, the budget you have available, and what your core goals are. I mean, if you've, you know, it's been a tough year, you've only got budget for strict compliance, you know, to the letter of the law.
Yeah.
We can look, we look at that and we work with that, right? And we put in place the logical steps to get there and the practical steps to get there. But you try and stick to sort of the ambit of the act and the ambit of why privacy law exists. And you do that, you've got a much more successful privacy program purely because it's easier for people to buy into it. I mean, you would have seen a lot of data breaches happen purely because of human error. And if you have a if you have proper buy-in, that human error is reduced quite substantially as opposed to a strict set of yes and no policies. You can do this, you can't do that.
Yeah. How, I mean, how often do companies approach these new rules like POPIA? As sort of kind of a grudge thing. They think, well, geez, more regulation that we're going to have to comply with, rather than saying, as you've suggested, actually, maybe this is an something we can use as an approach to actually improve our business and what we do and actually benefit the organization.
That's what I try. That's what I try and focus on. And I think that makes sense to me, because at the end of the day, companies are becoming far, far more data focused. Yeah. You have a ton of data on your books, and it's just the way in which business operates now, right? There's no business that doesn't utilize data to some extent to make their business better, whether it's coming literally from a Rolodex through to a full customer relationship management system.
Yes.
It's a similar concept. And if you've got a better understanding and better control over that, you're going to utilize it more effectively. Mm. And if you base your privacy program on that, and then make sure that obviously you comply with all the right checks and balances of POPIA, the POPIA Act, the POPIA regulations, the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, if you have to, you know, you figure out your regulatory universe that makes sense for you and you fit that in, you can pull massive benefit from that. You really can. And it filters through the organization as a cultural change, as opposed to a, okay, guys, we've now got a privacy policy. Here's what you need to read. Don't do anything outside of this policy.
Yeah.
Because
no one reads
if
it.
People read that policy, if they read it, it'll be, you know, cursory at 6:30 at night over a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And it doesn't result in a culture shift. And then all you get is you actually increase the risk within your organization of data mismanagement, as opposed to using it to benefit your organization, which to me, it's such an opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Such an opportunity to get to grips with what you have.
Now, with the POPI Act having been signed into law, it's actually not in effect yet, or not fully in effect yet, right? Maybe just take us through what is in effect now and what will come into effect later.
So there's very little in effect right now, right? It's literally the fact, it's the powers of the regulator and the fact that you can promulgate regulations is in the definition section, really. But as of 1 July 2021, pretty much the entire Act will come into effect. I mean, there's some other areas which are outstanding, but that will come in a little bit later. Practically, it doesn't really matter. The gist of it is that by 1 July 2021, the POPIA Act will be in effect in South Africa. How it will be enforced, how it will be policed, how it will be managed is a totally different question. And I mean, amongst my colleagues in the privacy industry, it's an interesting question now, because it's a new area, right? We're not sure how this works. I mean, I've dealt with other regulators who have been around for years and years, and they've got a structure in place. They've created a gravitas based on, you know, years of experience within the game. And I mean, I think our information regulator is incredibly capable, but how they're going to do it is what's really interesting. And we don't know. And that is always, I mean, for companies, really scary, right? To say, well, actually, we have no idea how this is going to be enforced. So make a risk-based call, right? You have to comply with this. It's the law.
Yeah.
So how are you going to go about this? My view is that, as I mentioned, is that it's a great opportunity to get to grips with what data you have in your organization, which of it is personal information, how are you going to best manage it? And from there, put in place a privacy program. Right. Yeah. Because it's reputational for you. It's there's regulatory penalties. There's all the sticks, right? To say, well, you know, this is what's going to go wrong if you don't. But the carrot of it is that you do get great benefit out of that data. So why not? Right. Yeah. And we've still got some time. We've got a couple months before next year, July, to get this in place. And it's far better to do it under less pressure than more. But now is a great time to do that.
Yeah. Do we know a lot yet about what the rules are going to say though? Because I mean, if you look at the telecommunications industry, for example, we've got the ICASA Act, and the ICASA Act sort of provides the framework for the establishment of ICASA and the rules it must abide by. But ICASA was then expected to go out and develop a whole series of regulations. In fact, that's it does it constantly and will continue to do so to govern the sector. So you know, the regulations on anything from radio frequency spectrum to digging up street. Are we going to see a similar sort of thing with the information regulator and the POPI Act? Will the information regulator now start, once it's properly established, start to develop regulations that give effect to the POPI Act, or does the POPI Act already set basically all the ground rules for the way companies are going to have to behave?
So the POPI Act is drafted in such a way that it's principled-based legislation, which means that it has a set of eight principles which companies have to adhere to. And then it sets out the specifics as how you need to comply with those principles. So we've got a pretty good idea as to what you need to do to comply with currently, right? So at Advance, we've developed a POPIA compliance framework, and we put that into we can implement that into a company, obviously dependent on the size, we amend the framework accordingly. So we've got a pretty robust idea of what's already there. I mean, there's been regulations which have been promulgated, so we understand what the information officer needs to do and what their roles and responsibilities are. So we're at a pretty good place right now in terms of knowing what the rules are. It's more around how the rules are going to be enforced. I mean, there's an interesting section in POPIA which creates different rules for certain for different areas. So the accounting bodies will create their own sort of privacy guidelines, and then that will be reviewed by the regulator. So POPIA makes provisions for that. But as of, 1 July, that comes, we've got a pretty robust understanding of what we need to do and what companies need to adhere to.
Right. As a matter of interest, I mean, you mentioned the data breaches that we've seen in South Africa over the last little while. This is almost one every couple of weeks now. What's going to happen to a company that suffers a data breach once POPIA is in full effect? Are you automatically now going to be punished by the information regulator for that data breach?
So the information regulator would run an investigation as to why that data breach occurred. And if they found that you were in breach of POPIA, they do have the right to fine you, and they do have the right to impose certain penalties and fines. I've got friends in the privacy industry who believe that nothing will actually change. And that is one view taken, that the regulator will just be completely inundated and overworked, and
Right.
that they won't actually be able to manage. And as you said, there's a data breach every few weeks. They won't have the capability. Well, they will have the capabilities, but they might not have the capacity
Sure.
to investigate every data breach. That is one view taken. I don't agree with that personally. I think that they will end up investigating a few, and they'll take an approach based on, I mean, like most other regulators, right? I mean, I don't think there's a regulator in this country who thinks they're properly funded and fully staffed. They'll take a similar view, and they'll investigate the high profile matters. They'll make examples out of some. They'll investigate the ones that have massive impact on data subjects, and they'll do the best they can. I mean, but that's part of it. We don't actually know. So there's the conservative approach of going, look, they'll enforce everything.
Yeah.
They'll run down every company who does not comply with POPIA. And then there's the other side, which is, well, they actually are understaffed and underfunded. They won't do anything, so the risk is really low.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't comply with that at all, but and I don't think that's the right way to look at things. And I also don't know how much truth there is in that. But those are really the two views as to how things are going to change. But really, only time will tell on that one.
Yeah, I suppose it'll be somewhere in the middle. But we've, you know, even I guess in companies that take this legislation extremely seriously and put in the most robust privacy measures and rules within their organizations, can still suffer a data breach. If
Absolutely.
you've got a determined hacker who wants to
Absolutely.
get in, he's probably going to get in eventually.
Well, I mean, look, that's where I'm quite positive around what we can offer at Advance, in that because we cover all three angles, right? We cover how your data is managed in terms of what are you using it for, how are you using it, and what information are you getting out of that data. Then what are the cybersecurity angles of how you're protecting your data? And then, what is your legal framework? What is your training in place? What is your organizational culture around data? Do your staff know what your categories of data are? That this is seriously classified. This can only be shared via encrypted email. That sort of stuff. And that trifecta is really, really powerful, right? Because it's capturing, there's no miscommunication between each, but there's no miscommunication between the lawyers, the data security consultants, the software developers, the data analysts. We're all speaking the same language and we're all speaking to each other. And that is where often things get very hairy, is that each department will go on their own pluck and do their job, quite frankly. They will, and they'll probably do a good job at it, but there's always going to be something lost in translation between the departments. And that's just the nature of how this works. But because data privacy is so cross-departmental,
yes,
you need someone to speak all those languages so that as little as possible is lost in translation between those three departments. I mean, what I saw, not often, but I saw occasionally, was the IT team would get on a project and they'd start and they'd be humming. They'd be 3 months down, they'd be doing a great job, they'd be hitting their milestones, be fantastic. But then legal would get wind of it and contact them and go, well, guys, you know, isn't, you know, what framework are you working off? Like, why, how are you doing this? No, we've got a SOC framework, or, you know, there's something, and legal will go, well, hang on, no, you need to explain this, because to me, this sounds like we need to have a policy in place. And then they'll bring in compliance. Obviously, depending on how big your organization is, right? You might not have both. And it would then become a muddle, and what was a good project would be stalled. And or vice versa, legal might start a really cool privacy program, bring in compliance, narrow down the regulatory universe, get everything nice and neat and sorted, start drafting the right policies. They'll get to IT and IT will go, our systems can't do this. We don't have the right software in place to monitor what you're asking us to monitor. And then the project will be stalled. So having those conversations right at the beginning with all the relevant stakeholders is so important in putting in place a proper privacy program. And that's what we offer. And I mean, that's why I think we've really got a leg up on the law firms and on the consulting firms, in that we can offer this fully formed piece of advice, as opposed to having to manage multiple stakeholders, which is always tough, right? Because then someone's doing translating in some area and you have to rely on the fact that everyone speaks a similar language.
Yes, yes. Now, it's an interesting one, and it raises questions about where, let's call them a chief privacy officer, for want of a better term, needs to report into. I mean, I've spoken to some of the local banks who have now taken the view that the chief information security officer, which is a function that traditionally reported into the CIO, is no longer going to report into the CIO, and that it's a role on its own now, and in fact requires a separate function, separate from the IT department, reporting possibly into the CEO or some other senior executive in the organization. If you are to create this chief privacy officer role within your organization, and you know it's probably not, I'm guessing it's probably not ideal that they report into IT or marketing or legal, that they perhaps report directly to the CEO. What's your take on that? Where should, if you are going to create a role within your organization, what should the reporting lines look like?
So the legislation is quite clear on that, actually.
Oh, is it?
It says that it needs to be sufficiently independent. So however that looks within your organization, and sufficiently independent and sufficiently senior so that they're taken seriously.
Yes.
is to paraphrase the legislation, right? So however that looks in your organization, that's where they should fit. And sorry, maybe that's something else to clear up. In terms of the GDPR, it's the data protection officer. And in terms of the POPIA, it's the information officer. So there is that role defined. And it's an important role, right? And because of everything we're talking about now, that role needs to have the gravitas to sway the organization in the right direction. And by default, the CEO would be the information officer in terms of POPIA if you don't appoint one, which is quite interesting, right? Because you automatically assume some form of liability if you don't address this, which is always quite rough to find out, because you'll often only find out when things have gone wrong.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting organizational question where to put your information officer, your DPO. Mm-hmm. And again, I always look at it, they need to be sufficiently independent and they need to have sufficient seniority. So to hire a very junior attorney or risk officer or IT or IT officer and make them report, you know, via three managers to the head of IT or the head of risk or the head of legal, that probably wouldn't fly in terms of having an information officer properly appointed. And also, again, you wouldn't get the benefit of that, right? You wouldn't get, you'd just be ticking a box and saying, cool, got an information officer, moving on. You wouldn't actually be getting the benefit of someone objectively looking, or as objectively as possible, looking at your data and going, hey, we can do that a bit better. Why don't we look at trying that out? That sort of thing.
So what sort of skills would the DPO need? It's kind of a new role within the organization. Would it be someone with a legal background, do you think, typically? What would they have studied, and what would their experience be?
Yeah. So I've seen people excel from legal. I've seen people excel from a risk background, and I've seen people excel from a technical and IT background. And again, that's what's so interesting about this area, is that you don't necessarily need a, you don't need to be a lawyer or a compliance officer to be the DPO.
Yeah.
It does help to have that background, to have that understanding. So when you read the legislation, you're reading it from a risk-based point of view of going, well, you know, I've argued in front of another regulator before, judging on what they do, I don't think that would be such a big deal in terms of what we are, or judging on how regulators operate, that's a huge deal. We need to focus on that.
Mm.
So the legal experience does help, but I'm biased because I am a lawyer, and that's my training, and that's where I've come from. But I have seen people across the spectrum excel in that. And again, from our point of view, we can offer the blind spots and advisory services in the blind spots of that person. So if you've appointed a lawyer, we can offer services around consulting on this data security side, on the technical side. If you've appointed someone who's technical, who comes from an IT background, we can offer the legal and compliance side of things, because that role can actually be successfully done by either one of those people. And I've seen from my side, at least, that where you have a compliance person, they always like having a legal person, you know, or an attorney to fall back on, to have that discussion, to have the risk-based discussions around how data privacy is going to be impacted and how it's going to be managed.
Brendan, this has been a fascinating discussion, but I think we'll leave it there. If anyone wants to find out more information about Advanced Intellect, what is your website?
It's advance.tech. That's advance.tech. You can have a look there. You can click the data privacy section, and my contact details are there as well.
Okay.
So if you want to get in touch around that.
Brilliant. Well, Brendan Ambrose is GM for data privacy at Advance, with a T, Advance Intellect. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to Tech Central today and sharing your insights on this area of the law.
Thanks, Duncan. Really very cool to be on the podcast.